We've been speaking the last several weeks about the mitzvah of Tfilas Kelim. Now we're going to talk about a major component of how to fulfill that mitzvah. We've been spending most of the time talking about the Kelim. Now we have to talk about the mitzvah part. Because we have all the Kelim in the world. We don't have a kosher mitzvah, so the whole people is not going to be acceptable. So we're not going to be able to do justice to all of what was involved in one shot. So we'll try to give just some of the Russian prakim as to what's important, and particularly different types of mikvot, different types of bodies of water. Sometimes people have questions of whether they're acceptable to fulfill Kelim. I'll try to give a little bit of the background to these halachos. So the sugya begins with the first of the Marmakomos. In the end of my text of a Zohar, that I am here with days, study Bar Kappara, went to the Brisa of Bar Kappara, Mitoshin Emma B'Meinida, Shemani Shetzorach Hazosh Lishushri, Tamlo Ma'ach Chilek, and Kema Tzolom Ma'zeinida, Mayim Shenida Tadelos, and Avi Omer Boim So. As well as commenting on the Pesukim in Parshas Matos, that we've spoken about already many times, which are the source for the mitzvah of Tfilas Kelim, although it is a machlokes rishonim, but the Gemara means this is really a din deraisa, whether it's just a derabbanan and a tzachta, but we're going to assume for now that we pass the Shulchan Aruch Tfilas Kelim as a deraisa. The Gemara comments that it's not clear what that phrase means, ach b'meini da yitzchata, but you're supposed to, when you kasher Kelim, when you buy Kelim from Goyim, when you kasher them, you're supposed to make the b'meini da yitzchata. What in the world is b'meini da yitzchata? That's what the Gemara says in the second line. Mayim shnida tazalosem. It's referring to the fact that it's water that a nida would normally use, i.e. a kosher mikvah. The other agorim saw it has to be the size, it has to be the type of water, it has to be the standards of a mikvah that would pass for hilchos tefilas nida. Only such a mikvah is acceptable for tefilas kelim as well. What is the basic standard for tefilas nida? The Gemara tells us it's 40 saw, which is a certain amount of water. It corresponds to approximately somewhere around 150 so gallons of water. That's their minimum. That's the shear of the Hilchos Mikvot. Where in the world did the shear come from? We must explain that the Torah describes tevila, the person immerses in a mikvah. The Torah describes rachas that's called the tzaro. If they have to wash, they have to immerse all of their body. The Torah explains to us that kol b'tzaro means mayim shekol gufo elabahem. It has to be the amount of water that an average normal-sized person would be able to totally, completely submerge themselves at one shot. The Gemara says, the Chazal figured it out, that amount of Mayim Shekovu for Abraham corresponds to 40 saw. So that's the Shia ben HaTorah. Anything less than that would not be an acceptable mikvah. So it would not be an acceptable mikvah neither for Tzilas Nida, nor for the Tzilas for the purposes of Tzilas Kelim. So the Rishonim could point out that that magic number 40 saw, that's the bare minimum for a mikvah, is not 100% true. It's not always true. Places in the second of the Mamakomos and the Berazar and Hemazay tells us Mayim Shenida Tevelet, there is a din that the Gemara says that even though normally the Shia mikvah is 40 saw, that's if you're talking about tefillah for a person. If you're talking about tefillah for Kelim, now you have tefillah for Kelim doesn't mean we call tefillah Kelim, but tefillah Kelim means if you have a kli that's tamei, if you have a very, very small kli that's tamei, you can be tefillah technically in any collection of water, even if it's less than 40 saw. The Mishnah in the beginning of the second is both described. You literally have a puddle of water on the ground. If it rains in the afternoon, you have a little puddle in your backyard, but it's not necessarily 40 saw. You can take your kli, which is tamei, and be total in that. That's what's called tefillas b'chatan v'tinarius. Machat means a little needle. The cedar means like a little something, which is so small it can fit into the smallest amount of water. The Gemara tells us that there was a halacha b'Moshe b'Sinai that as long as it's a revius, as long as it's a very, very small amount, 3 ounces or so of a little collection of water, that's a kosher mikvah for the purpose of tefillas kelim mid'araisa. Again, not the tefillas kelim that we're talking about, tefillas kelim mid'tumah. So the Taisus points out that that may be true. I think we're getting another tefillas kelim as we speak. So Taisus tells us that even though that may be true, that tefillas kelim for tumah are sufficient with the revius. Tefillas kelim chadashim, what we call tefillas kelim today, is compared to the main nida, mayim shan nida elamehem, and therefore it has to be mamish 40 saw. So anything short of 40 saw is not going to be acceptable. But we pass in the tefillas kelim deraisa, this is an absolute din in HaTorah. So you can have little bodies of water, little questions of water, that although technically in HaTorah may be good for some other kinds of tefillah, but not for our purposes, they require real 40,000. Pretty much, in terms of the volume, in terms of the amount of water that we're talking about, the standards are the same as a regular tefillah in terms of tefillahs and nidah. But just because we have a collection of 40 stah doesn't automatically mean that we have a kosher mikvah. There are a few other standards that have to be met, and that next to the Marmakamot, the third of the Marmakamot, based on the Mishnah Masechet Mikvot, the Perkei Mishnehei, but the Mishnah speaks about a Zochon Kemayon, and Mitzvim Kemikvah. The Mishnah refers to two different types of water. Sometimes the water is water that's moving, that's what's called Zochon, Zochon is literally to crawl. Sometimes the water is moving, and sometimes the water is stationary. So the Mishnah tells us that we have a tradition that's also based on the Pesukim of Chumash, the Torah's Kodim, Darshan, the Sofa Pesukim. We have a tradition that there are fundamentally two different types of bodies of water in Halacha. There's what we call colloquially a mikvah, and then there's what's called the mayon. A mikvah means a collection. Ach mayon abor, mikvah mayon. Mikvah mayon means loshen yikavu hamayon amakom echad. That it's a collection of stationary water. The very definition of a mikvah means that the water is not going anywhere. It's literally in one place. It has to be a mikvah mayon yikavu hamayon amakom echad. It has to be literally a hole in the ground, or a hole in the building or something that collects the water in one place. The water is not going anywhere. That's the definition of a mikvah. And that water can be either rainwater, or it can be, as we go on, melted snow, and anything that pretty much came down from Shemayim, that will qualify as a mikvah mayim. Then there's a whole different kind of a body of water called the mayon, or zocher, things which are moving, which are underground springs. Water that's coming from an underground spring or something, it's not in one place, it's not stationary, it's moving. And those who've been at the Ari's mikvah spot, but the Ari's mikvah is a misnomer. It's not really a mikvah. It's really a mayon, because it's an underground spring that's literally moving. So that's why it's so cold. So you have a mikvah for fresh. You have a mikvah mayim, a collection of rainwater, and you have a mayon, which is running water. So the Mishnah refers to the din that whenever you're dealing with rainwater, rainwater is only metaher when it's in one place. If the rainwater is moving, so that water is absolutely possible for a mikvah. The pashtun is that's the din of daraisa. Rainwater that's on the move is not acceptable. Spring water on the move is totally acceptable. Every spring water like that. So that's the difference between what the Mishnah means, a zochon kemayon, the water that's moving, that can only be the Torah's mayon. And notzim, the dripping, notzim means the drip, the dripping water, namely the rain, water that has to be kemikvah, that has to be just in one stationary body. What if you have a mixture of the two? What if you have a big body of water that has a little bit of rainwater, a little bit of spring water? So, hey, Rabbi Tzadok, ala zeichlet, shemavu, and notzim, shem sherim, that you follow Rav. But if you have a body of water that is more underground spring water than rainwater, even though it's moving, that would be acceptable. So the basic three halachas are that rainwater must be stationary, spring water can be moving, and when you have a mixture of the two, and whatever the rope is, that determines what the status of the body of water is. Just as an aside, it's this halacha that rainwater cannot be zochel, cannot be moving, that is the source of many, many complications and many expenses that we have in the modern-day mikvot. Because we have to be so careful that the rainwater isn't moving, so we have to be very careful that we don't develop cracks in the walls of the mikvah. We shall describe, based on Mishnah and Sefer Mikvot, you can have a beautiful mikvah, but if the cracks develop, then the rain is starting, the water is starting to move. It's seeping slowly but surely through the crack. So according to many Rishonim, that would be a serious problem of Zochon. So therefore, when we build mikvot today, we go really, really go all out to make sure that the cement that we use is the highest quality cement, and it's built in such a way, and it's always monitored, it's supposed to check to make sure that in fact the water level is not disappearing, the water is not cracking, the water is not seeping anywhere, because that could potentially disqualify the mikvah. And we have another issue that comes up in the construction of our modern day mikvah, which also is based on this concern of Zochelin, and that's the issue of filter. If you have a filter in the mikvah, so it's a big question, is that considered to be Zochelin or not? Based on a tshuva in the Rivash. The Rivash wasn't going to have to put in the filters in 800 years ago. But he talks about, what if you have water that's being taken out of the mikvah, it's leaving the mikvah, and it's in a system that's coming right back again. So it's coming out and going in, going out going in, which is basically what a filter is. So the Rivash seems to say that wouldn't be a problem. Zochelin. Zochelin means that the water is leaving the mikvah, and it's back on that again. Coming out and coming right back in again, maybe that wouldn't be called Zochelin. That's a big question. What exactly the Rivash said, what the parameters of that are, that's part of the discussion about filters. So we build the mikvah today, so we all the mikvahs today have filters in them, otherwise we can get very dirty very quickly. We filter the water in the mikvah, but the filter is never on at the time when the people are using the mikvah. if the soap would be on at the time that the woman is in the mitzvah, that would be a serious rishon. But the soap would potentially disqualify the whole mitzvah. All these laws have all kind of a backup systems, all kind of safety nets to make sure that there's no mess up, that the women aren't using the mitzvah at the time that the soap is actually on. Some mitzvahs have alarms on them, some mitzvahs have, you know, the famous mitzvah not that far from here that has these lights on, that's all like disco lights. When the filter is on, so there's this tremendous light, like shooting all over the place, to make sure that everybody realizes, stay away, you're not supposed to be using the mixer right now. There's all the safeguards and everything, every once in a while there's a mix-up. Somebody uses the mixer and the filter's on. So this is a serious shaila, what the status of the mixer would be at that point. But anyway, getting back to the story. So these are all different halachas that all revolve around this basic psul of Zochlin. So this psul of Zochlin, namely if you have rainwater on the move, is going to be a problem. This is the background for a very, very important sugya. Those will learn that the only, so it's coming around the bend in a couple of weeks. It's the Masechet Nedarim and Nachnem, a very important sugya about the kashrus of mikvot, which plays out very often in the Biblical Tshuva of Kalim. What we're going to discuss is using different kinds of natural bodies of water for the purposes of Tefillah Mizah, and then by extension, by Tefillah of Kalim, because whatever is acceptable for Tefillah Mizah can be used for Tefillah Kalim, whatever not cannot. And the Gemara raises the question, what's the status of different bodies of water? Are they kosher or are they potol? And a lot of the question revolves around just a very technical, Matthias information. What is the source of the water in this particular body of water? Is it rainwater or is it underground spring water? Because the body of water that we're referring to happens to be moving, i.e. it's a river. That's what the Gemara is specifically referring to, a river. A river is obviously moving, part of the river, so the water is going downstream. So the water is on the move, that's considered to be Zochalim. If the source of the water is mostly spring water, so that would be okay, because it's spring water, that's also would be fine. If the source of the water is mostly rainwater, mostly melted snow, which is halakhah like rainwater, then that would pose a problem, and that would potentially disqualify this whole river for use as a mikvah, even though it's a lot of water, and it's more than 40 saw, but it's moving, it's Zochlin, and if it's mostly rainwater, that's going to be a problem. So this shaila was originally raised by the Gemara and the Rishonim vis-a-vis Tefillah Mizah. And then by extension, this is going to carry out Tefillah Kalim as well. Can you use a river for Tefillah Kalim or other potential equivalents, lakes and other kinds of other bodies of water, which may run into similar problems. So the Gemara in the fourth of the Ramakamas, in the Sefer Tzedar, but not from them, Amar Alas, one of the days, Yomar Rabin, Amar Rab, Mitra, Amar Rabba, Sada, Rabba, Pras. Very poetic way of describing the water cycle in Eretz Yisrael in Bavel. The Gemara says that if you want to know whether it's rainy, if you live in Bokal, you want to know what the weather forecast is, if you want to know what happened in Eretz Yisrael, so you can't, no one's going to tell you whether it rained or not. So the good way to tell is that you look at the Euphrates River. That Mitra B'marav, when there's a lot of rain in the west, rain in Eretz Yisrael, the Sada Rabba Pras, so the Pras, the Euphrates River, is an aid. The Euphrates will testify to you that there's a lot of rain. How is that? Very simple, because the water, the Gemara is describing that some of the water that's coming and that part of the world close to the Eretz Yisrael, so some of that water is also spilling over. I think the mountains of Turkey, whatever place, whatever the object of that, exactly where the water is coming. But the bottom line is that's ultimately what's leading into the water of the Euphrates. The city in Buffalo are trying to figure out whether it's raining in Eretz Yisrael, so a good test is to see whether there's a lot of water in the Nar Pras. If the Nar Pras is overflowing, that means there was a lot of water this past winter. But that statement of Rav, that the Euphrates River is so affected by the rain, that seems to indicate that a good chunk of water of the Euphrates is actually rainwater. That does not bode well for Hilchot Tefillah, neither Tefillah Adam nor Tefillah Kalim. Because here you're sitting on the Euphrates and you want to know, can you use it as a mikvah? Can you tell me a pot on the Euphrates? So then it's going to depend. If you tell me that most of the water is not a rainwater, the rainwater that's moving is possible. It's the problem of Zochalim. So the West says, according to Rabin's statement, the name of Rav, that would be a problem. But if the Nar Pras has a lot of water in it, that means it has a lot of overflow of rainwater, and most of the water is probably rainwater. That's going to disqualify the whole Nar Pras from all of Tefillah. The Gemara says that statement of Rav disagreed with Shmuel, but pleaded to Shmuel. The Yom HaShmuel, not only keep in this barich, Shmuel made a statement about the general understanding of the way the rivers are functioning, that you can always assume that the river is more spring water than rainwater. And since there's always underground springs, and the Kipe Mivrach, that means from its original sources, from the beginning to the river, it's getting its water mostly from underground, So it's always considered to be like a Mayan, and therefore a Mayan, even though it's so full, would be acceptable. We have Machlokes Rav Shmuel, even we had to understand just the mechanics of what's going on in terms of the average river. Do you have to assume that the Nahar Paras, it's filled up with water, so that's mostly rainwater, which would disqualify it? Or is it mostly spring water, which would still make it acceptable? And then the Gemara goes on and says, a plea to Shmuel and to Shmuel. But Shmuel himself contradicted himself, because Shmuel made a statement that the rain, the underground water, the underground spring is always the source for the rivers, which would mean that it's always kosher. But Shmuel himself said, Yom HaShmuel, Ein HaMayim V'Tayim V'Zoichlin, or Pras Nur Metishra Bulvad. Shmuel said that the only time you could ever use the Nahar Paras, the Euphrates, is only in Tishrei, only in the fall time. Why is that? Because by the fall time, then there's very, very little rainwater. It hasn't rained in a long time, and it hasn't, snow hasn't melted. It's already, for 6 months since there was any water coming down. So whatever water is left in the Nahar Paras at that time, it's probably from the underground spring. But if you want to use the Nahar Paras in the winter, that's out of the question because it's the rainy season. If you want to use it in the spring, that's out of the question because it still has the melted snow. You want to use it in the summer, it still has the remnants of the melted snow. By Rosh Hashanah time, there's no rain, there's no snow, there's nothing. So there's a very, very small period of window of opportunity during the year if you can use the Nahar Paras. And then we can tell the story about a poor Shmuel Avad Lahum Mikvaos Labanta Diyami Nisan. That Shmuel's father actually followed this sheet also, that they all lived near the Nahar Paras. But Shmuel's father was of the opinion that the Nahar Paras, the Euphrates, is only kosher for very, very small time during the year. So during the May Nisan, he prepared special mikvahs for his daughters to use because he didn't want them to use the river. But whereas in May Tishrei, so then he let them use the river and he put up He put up mats just for Kniya so they can use the river, so at least they should cover themselves. No one should see them being tarzal. So at the end of the day, the Gemara leaves us kind of hanging with the Machlokes Amorayim, which probably was Machlokes Asanayim also. What our view is on rivers. Do we generally think that rivers are acceptable for Tula, or do we generally frown upon using rivers unless one really knows for certain that the river is mostly rainwater? So this Machlokes that started on the bank of the Euphrates has been a Machlokes for hundreds and thousands of years. Really, Adiyam is asking to all rivers, can we accept the river for Tefillah or not? So what was the minute? How do we follow on this Shaila? So the Ramon, Hilchos Mitzvot, quotes that there was a view of Rebbe Tam. The Tam was very natal on the Shaila. The Tam thought that all rivers are basically okay. We can follow Shmuel's initial statement. All rivers are always mostly rainwater, enough to worry about anything, everything's okay. And most of the Rishon probably disagreed with Rebbe Tam. So the Ramon writes that we really should not rely on Rebbe Tam. Mechachilah, you should not follow the view of Rebbe Tam. If your mom is stuck, you live somewhere, there's no mikvah, there's no other way to go, then you could have a you have no choice. In the moment of halacha, you wouldn't follow the view of a bein hatam. In the Middle Ages, there were some communities that had to follow the bein hatam. There were some Jews who lived in these far-flung places. They couldn't put together enough money to build a mikvah, and there was always a river around, so they would use the rivers. And there were people in the Middle Ages who followed the view of a bein hatam, but the Ramah says that one is only supposed to follow from the Shafel Chagodol. There is a fascinating statement that appears in the Mordechai in Hilchos Mitzvot. We discussed with this Machlokes at the time of the Yedid, and as you read this, you see things haven't changed all that much over the years. And the Mordechai writes that there used to be some people when they wanted to get married, so they would ask the family when they were asking about the Shidduch, and they would ask about the family. So they wouldn't ask because the mother was just Tazer Mishpacha. This Jew didn't just Tazer Mishpacha in the Middle Ages, so they would ask. The following shot, this is on the list of, if they would ask about the tablecloth, so then they would ask about did the woman, or did the mother of this potential mate, did she rely on the cooler of Rebbeinu Tam to be present in the rivers, or did she go the extra mile to go find a real bona fide 100% kosher or a mikvah? Both the shot, because people didn't want to marry into families, because the children were born by mothers who were only present in the mikvah, that were only kosher for Rebbeinu Tam. So the Mordechai frowns upon that practice of asking. He doesn't think that's the right question to ask, because first of all, Rebbeinu Tam, we can't argue with a person. And he says, and even if Rebbeinu Tam is not right, even if the mikvah is partial, so what? The child's still kosher. And the din is that even if a woman didn't go to the mikvah altogether, the child is still kosher. The child's status is not affected by the fact that the mother didn't go to the mikvah. Not a good thing. Obviously, we're not advocating not going to the mikvah, but in terms of the real halachic status of the child, it doesn't make much of a difference. But the Mordechai didn't like that question. We should just know that they used to ask funny questions in the Middle Ages also. They were just very longish questions. So it's a very, very hard to understand what this halachic is. So there seems to be, if there's a long tesis in a few places about this, there seems to be, there are halachic slash matzias issues here. There is a halachic issue that's called kama kama botel, which means that if you start out with a source of spring water, and then you start to pour more rainwater on, the Rabbeinu Tam was of the opinion that min haTorah, everything is botel to the little drop of spring water anyway. So midaraita, Rabbeinu Tam thought there was no problem with chlal. And others disagree with that statement of kama kama botel. That was probably part of the machlokes as well. There's always a question, how is that if you mishayar such a thing, even if it's a machlokes and matzias, and when you have machlokes and matzias, it's very hard to be mevarer, such a machlokes could exist. It's somewhere between a mix, to tarevah, so to speak, of a little bit of halach, a little bit of matzias, as to what the issue exactly is. But I hope on him, in today, in Rosh Hashanah, hey, we really try not to align this. We would not let people tovel in rivers, and therefore, really, we should not advocate toveling kalim in rivers as well. So every once in a while, we get the shaila. People are camping somewhere, they're out here, there's no mix around. They happen to be near a river, they wind up, they just walk down to the hut and stick their a river somewhere and stick the kalim in it. And that's the kalim, but clearly, you're not going to be supposed to do that. And we try not to rely on the Shabbat of time, even though the original machlek is in some of the others, was about tefillah nashim, which is obviously much stricter. But look, people, one shouldn't rely on just the tefillah kalim either. No, but we know that all rivers have some of the ground springs. The question is there also a lot of rainwater? That's the question. If there's too much rainwater, that's going to be a problem. But this shaila is not only true about what we call rivers, because but Mazav is different, so Mazav for sure needs a mine, right? Mazav couldn't use a resin. But only a Zav, only a male Zav needs a mine, not a Zavah. Right. The Sefer says that, the Serish. Rashi quotes it, there was one of the Gaonim who wrote, otherwise in Rashi it's not true, it's against the Tosef. The Sefer says explicitly that a Zavah does not need a mine, and therefore all our women can use regular mitzvot. Most of them involved are not really mayonos. A few communities have mayonos, because if you dig deeper up to the ground, and you have nothing else to do with the money and dig into the ground, then you could potentially hit a mayon. If you get a mayon, then you could have yourself a mayon instead of a mikvah. I remember when we were we decided not to do that in Paramus. So we built a mikvah in Paramus, so we were given the option of potentially digging into the ground. Hope for the best, and you may hit, if you hit an underground spring, so then it will help you and help us make growth, but it's very risky because what we were told at the time was, is that there's no guarantee with all the sensors and all the mitzvah and all the kunsts to try to figure out exactly where the mayan is, it's a certain degree of hit or miss. So they said it's a $25,000 shot to try to go down. If you make it, you make it. If not, you just threw $12,000 into the garbage. So we opted against that. We went with the conventional way, the regular way of building growth are using rainwater. That's a much safer way, and that's the older style way. But there are some as well, that there are certain halachic milas, there are certain things you have to accomplish if you get spring water. Well, some of them as well around have spring water. I think in Bethesda has a spring, if I'm not mistaken. I think in New Square has a spring also. I think Tenafly, I can't say for certain, I think Tenafly may have a spring also. Tenafly mitzvah. And I saw it one time, especially it's been a long time, I don't remember which are which. But a couple of mikvahs have them, but most of the mikvahs don't have them. Anyway, came back to the story. So this issue in terms of the rivers is not only true in terms of a river, it's true for other kinds of natural bodies of water. As well, if you have lakes, the lakes could run into potentially the same problem. If you have a lake, so if the lake is not stationary, the water is going nowhere, then I don't care where the water comes from. It comes from Shemayim, it comes from Zareth, it's kosher anyway. But the problem is a lot of lakes have outlets for them. So very often the lake is also a shtickle tefillin. So if the lake is moving and some of the water is leaving, so then if the lake is rainwater, then it's okay. No, sorry, then it's not. If it's spring water, then it's okay. If it's rainwater, then that would potentially be a problem. So anytime you want to toilet in a lake, it's not so simple. You can't just assume it's a big body of water, so it must be okay. You have to make sure, someone has to really know what they're looking for, to make sure that either to figure out whether it's rainwater or spring water. And if it's spring water, then you're fine for sure. If it's rainwater, you have to really check to make sure if there is no significant outlet that would be a problem, which could potentially qualify as ochel. So this is not only true again for tefillos nashim, it's true for tefillos kelim. There's a big issue. A lot of people are out on trips near lakes or the mountains, and they just assume that all lakes, everything is kosher. Not always true. You have to go lake by lake in order to determine whether it's really an acceptable mix for that. So the Rashba writes that when we speak about Zechila, the only part of Zechila that disqualifies the mikvah is what's called Zechila Hanikeres. It has to be a Zechila that's recognizable. As the Rashba says, if not, if you can't see the Zechila, the Rashba says, Ein lecha mikvah v'olam v'tasha, because in the olden days, a mikvah was mamash a hole in the ground. That's what it says in the Chumash. Ach mikvah maya, ach mayon v'o mikvah maya. What we do today is, we also do the same thing. We also dig a hole in the ground. Because today, we want it with cement, we make it fancier, we make it cleaner. Okay. But the model is the exact same thing. You dig a hole in the ground and hope for the best. So we just cost us a couple of $1 million to do that, but it's the same basic model. So in the olden days, the water seeps into the ground. And the Rashi says, why isn't every mikvah possible? The Rashi says, it's not Nikolayan. That also becomes very tricky. What's called Nikolayan or not? So let's say you have a little tiny crack in the mikvah, but nobody notices what the water is going in. Maybe that's kosher. Maybe that's not. Maybe that would be kosher. That comes also a detail of the mikvah. So you have to be careful. When you're talking about any kinds of natural bodies of water, you have to make sure that you're not running into a zolfan issue, both in terms of hilchot, the mikvah for women, as well as the mikvah for Caleb as well. I was once I was called by, there was a group of families who was going to some place out in on the West Coast, and they were going to spend a couple of days on some campground or somewhere, in the middle of nowhere, and they wanted to know whether the particular lake that was there was kosher for a mikvah. They were married, and couples were going. They wanted to know whether to use that lake for a mikvah. I said, it's hard for me to tell you, what the mikvah is. I don't know what the source of the water is. Is there a dam in the lake? It's not a dam. I have no idea what's going on. So they got one of the park rangers on the phone. They were trying to discuss with him what exactly the details are. So they started asking some questions about is there an outlet in the lake? Is the lake dammed up? Did they ever open up the dam to let the water out? So he got very, very nervous. He thought we're trying to blow off the bridge. So we're trying to destroy the national park. So we're trying to explain to him that, no, we're just interested in ritual training, what we're talking about. So anyway, the conversation didn't go so well. But it was a spooky end to the story, because I told him I had no idea what the answer of this, whether this lake is in the kosher or not. The spooky end of the story was that apparently the day before they're supposed to go off this place, the campground burnt down. So I'm like, there everyone. I had nothing to do with that. I didn't give a curse to the campground. But my son had to go fly somewhere else. So I don't know. At the end of that, I don't know what happened to that particular lake. So you never know. There was once, I used to teach in third. So I was once talking about some things about Miss Paul. I mentioned something about I said, be very careful about certain bodies of water. You can't just assume that all natural bodies of water are kosher. So one of the girls there, back 20 years ago, one of the girls there told me that she had a friend who lived in some place who had been using a married friend, who had once mentioned her in passing that where she lived, there was no mikvah whatsoever. She was using some kind of a body of water. And she started to describe what it was. And I said, how much possible in a Torah? How much faster? So she called her friend and said, you better call her out, but you better find out where to go, but you can't go to the mikvah anymore. The mom said, shout out to the courage. I said, only see Baruch Hashem. I said, I thought to talk about her as well, but if you're in the middle of mom, she doesn't sit still, no one nowhere. So I hope she figured out a better aid. You can't just assume that all, just because it's water, that it's special. Anyway, getting back to the story. So the mix of the standards of the mikvah of Kalim are pretty much the same as the Tfilas Adam. One of the basic halachas that govern all of the mikvahs is called mayim she'uvim. Even if you have water that's coming from the sky, coming into the mikvah, 40 stars, taking fish, everything's great, but the water was collected in a kli, collected in some kind of a utensil or a vessel somewhere along the way, so that automatically disqualifies the mikvah. That's called mayim she'uvim. So there is a big machlekes in Rishonim, what exactly the source of this halacha is, that mayim she'uvim is a problem. So we'll take a look at the fifth of the Maram Kavod. It's recited in the Vash and the Stam of Vav. He quotes from Rashbam Rabbi Natam of Farshi, the Kula Shav Havi Deraisa. Rashbam Rabbi Natam of the opinion that if you have a mikveh that's completely filled up with water, that the whole water came through a kalim, through utensils, so that mikveh is mamish possibly deraisa. They bring a raya from Sukkim and Mishnayas, back and forth, to try to bring a raya that the bit of Mayim Shuvim is a real bona fide din of deraisa. Then if you skip down to the first one, line is Berevius, about 7 lines down from the top. At the end of the line, Lurin Nireh, Defilo Chulo Shav Derabbanan. The Reed disagreed with both the Rashbam and the Rebbe Natam. The Natam was his Rebbe Natam, and the Rashbam was his two uncles. He was the Reed's mother, was the sister of the Rashbam Rebbe Natam. So he's the next generation. He's arguing with both his uncles. So they're not right, but the uncles are saying. He said that the whole din of Mayim Shuvim is only possible with the Rabbanim. The Machlekes, the Gedalia, the Mishnayim, is Mayim Shuvim a problem with the Raisa? Is Mayim Shuvim a problem with the Rabbanim? Everybody agrees that that's the problem. It's such a problem that the Mishnah tells us that even if the whole mikvah is not Shuvim, just a very, very small amount of the mikvah is Shuvim, but the Kimul Lugin Mayim Shuvim disqualifies the mikvah. Kimul Lugin is a very, very small amount. A wool, what we call a revius. A revius is the 3 ounces, but we have a 3 ounces of a cup, a kiddush cup, and that's a quarter of a lug. So you're talking about 12 kiddush cups of liquid. It's not all that much. Big mikvah, very, very small amount of water. That could disqualify the entire mikvah. That din is on a midi rabbanon. Even if you hold that mayim shuvim pasul is a mikvah, but they're right, so that's only as most of the mikvah is shal. But if just a small amount of shal, then it only pasul midi rabbanon. But it does pasul the mikvah. You have to be so careful when you're building a mitzvah that you don't run into any problems with mayim shuvim. That takes up hundreds of thousands of dollars just to make sure you set up all kinds of systems with pipes, mice, with things on the roof, and about everything all over the place, just to make sure everything's got to be 100% sure that it's not sure. I remember when there's a din in mayim shuvim that was called a base kibbol. Any kli that has a receptacle, even the smallest receptacle, if it collects water, that can automatically disqualify the mitzvah. I remember when we were building the mikvah in Paranus, so we were, before we actually filled up the water, so we climbed up onto the roof with the fellow who was helping us, the Swedish fellow who was directing us to building the mikvah, one of the world-class mikvah experts. So he was on the roof with me, and he told me to put my hand in the gutter, just to go along, run my hand along the gutter on the roof to see whether there's any cracks or anything whatsoever. At the last minute, make sure there's nothing that could potentially collect water. So I'm running my hand through the whole thing, smooth as non, there's anything perfect. And he says, let me check. So he runs his hand along the gutter, and he stops, and he says, remember this again, I was afraid I was going to fall off the roof. He's giving up, there's a vice keyboard. There's a vice keyboard here. Says, where's the vice keyboard? He said, the screws that are holding the gutter into place, so the top of the screw has a little indentation, so water will collect in that little tiny indentation. If you have enough screws and you do it enough times, you're going to end up with a 3 lugin of Mayim Shuvim. So I said, okay, so what do we do now? No problem. I think he was tricking me. He knew what he was looking for. So no problem. He pulls out like some silly putty out of his pocket, and he stuffs up every hole and every screw. No more vice keeping. So as I learned that day. Well, if you have 3 lugin before the mikvah is actually filled up with 40 saw, that can potentially disqualify the mikvah. So we're very, very careful. We're building the mikvah. Every possible quirk of any of the kibbol is completely and totally removed, not to run into any problem. So every once in a while, there are mikvahs that exist that are completely shuvim. Mikvahs that are not used by women, when what we call colloquially a men's mikvah. Many of the men's mikvahs are literally John Deathbug. It means they're just filled up with water from the pipes, regular man shuvim, without any problems whatsoever. Why is that? Because the men's mikvah doesn't really have to be kosher. The men's mikvah for the minig of tzvila for men, so then even mayim shuvim is acceptable. But women are obviously not allowed to use that mikvah. Some men's mikvahs are built as kosher mikvahs. They're built mamish with the regular standards of the mikvah. But there are many men's mikvahs out there that are quote unquote mikvahs, but they're not really mikvahs. They're really mayim shuvim, legami mayim shuvim. So they're good for the minig, for the ezra, things like that. But for women, they would be absolutely no good for gayim. They would be totally no good for Torah, maybe. And if it's no kale, it would not be acceptable as well. But many people make that mistake. Many people think that they can sometimes bring a kli to a men's mikvah or something to table it. So that's out of question. One should not be bringing a kli to a regular person's mikvah anyway. The mikvahs don't like that at all. The obvious reason, all you have to do is drop one dish in the mikvah and you're finished. So one should never, ever bring a kli to a person's mikvah unless the policy of the mikvah to permit that. But even to a men's mikvah, so one should not be doing that, forgetting about policy as well, because this particular men's mikvah may not even be a kosher mikvah. Hopefully, it would be possible. Well, not to do it as a woman, but since men are in the mikvah, and then to make a bracha. Yeah, right. According to Sadi, according to those who say that going to mikvah is not what she really did, it should probably be, depending on what the reason for that sheet is, if it's just based on the kind of Ezra, then Imam Shul would be good. If it's based on some kind of a deraisa or some other kind of a din, then it would need a kosher mikvah. I remember it was once in Erev Yom Kippur, I lived in the Heights, So I was walking down the hill to the two mikvahs. There's the regular boys' mikvah and then the dumb of mikvah. The dumb of mikvah is a men's mikvah. It's just, it's mayim shuvim. It's not really a kosher mikvah. But I was standing on the corner and trying to figure out which one should I go to. Somebody said to me, come to dumb of mikvah, come with our sifa. This boy said, ah, come on, I want to be tummy the rice. I don't want you to be tummy the rice. You want to go to the real mikvah. So I decided, I made an effort to pay the extra couple of dollars, almost the extra block to the boys' mikvah. It was mamash min hashamayim. As I was walking down 186 towards the boys' mikvah, was the person in front of the mamash collapsed onto the floor. Mamash itself, I called him, whatever, got the ambulance, whatever it was. It was mamash min hashamayim because I was able to help the person because I chose to go to the derayim mikvah around the room. I got a lot. I sound like a heaven now. I'm burning that campground and saying, "Leave from your boat." Then the mikvah, I don't know what's going to happen. Very strange and spooky shit tonight. The last issue that does come up with mice in terms of standards of mikvah is the sixth of the mikvah. There's a big machlokes in Rishonim about the status of snow. Snow is basically water, but it's frozen water. Because it's frozen, water. But can you use snow in the state that's in? Well, this shiloh, get the shiloh every winter, get the shiloh. The guy has a new pilot, Caleb. He doesn't want to bother driving out to the mikvah. He looks in the backyard, there's 18 inches of snow out there. So Givaldi will stick his fork, the knives in his plates, and his glasses into the snow. And Givaldi, what's the din? So the Rishonim had a big machlekes. In the bottom of the Rambam comes, they quote the Mordechai, quotes the whole machlekes of Rishonim about the status of the snow. Basically, what boils down to the following, that there are some Rishonim who learned that snow is a kosher mitzvah. You can mamish the title, Kalim, you can tell the people. Mordechai quotes from one of the Rishonim who said, you can mamish the title of a person. If a woman wants to go to the mikvah in the snow, she can go mamish into the snow herself. So most of the Rishonim disagreed with that for two reasons. Some Rishonim said that when the Mishnah speaks about something in snow, the Mishnah doesn't mean snow. It means snow that melts. It means snow that melts is a mikvah. Snow that snow? That's not mayim. That's shelos. You can't be that. Torah said that's to be mayim. And then the other Rishonim add on that when you travel in snow, the snow never really touches you. It's not touching your entire body because it's only when you want the water. Water is a liquid. So the liquid automatically touches all parts of you. If you go to the snow, there are air pockets, there are places where the snow doesn't touch your body. That's not going to fit you altogether. That's what we assume in halacha, that one should not be traveling. People, sure, should not be traveling in snow for many reasons, but halacha reasons also. And even to a scale, should not be done in snow. There was some acharon who wanted to be making a shasar chak of its plate chuk. It's only glass, which we said is only the derabbanan. There was some opinion that said that the making relies on the kilim, that it would be all right. But we don't really follow that either. One should not follow that. There's some who do that. I remember one time I called with a shiloh. They were at the in-laws for Shabbos. It was late Friday afternoon. And the guy calls and says, the mother just told me that she bought a new set of glasses and she just tumbled them in the backyard in the snow. What am I supposed to do? So I said, don't tell me about it. I said, yeah, for Shabbos, you should try to, in a nice way, either convince her that's probably better to tumble them again without a bracha. But for Shabbos, you can fix glasses. The tier we spoke about before, they're not your glasses anyway. So you probably don't have to tell them anyway. That was from the Shiru Glenn back. So the Chachil, we wouldn't rely on it. But there was some folks who won't make on the Shafakai Gadol, but the title is no. It's the same shout about a Tilted Diamond, no. Because you're allowed to, whenever you have a body of water that's kosher to be a mikvah, then you can just stick your hands into that body of water and then you don't have to wash the Tilted Diamond. That is a Tilted Diamond. As Machlekes have shown, when you make a bracha on a Tilted Diamond, but for sure you can do it. So we used to do this all the time. I don't know if you can tell anybody in Vroyas, we used to do this all the time on Thursday night. I pick up the boys from Mishmar, and I would always bring them a pizza pie in the car. And I would always tell them to go run out of the car to go wash the Tilted Diamond. So sometimes the school building was already locked, so they couldn't get back into the building. So I would always tell them, when you go into the kitchen, you have to go to the kitchen, and just stick your hands into the mikvah, because the kelimah is the kosher mikvah. So that is the Tilted Diamond. You're allowed to do that. And that used to be part of our Thursday night back. But please, I don't know what the first policy is about that. But mikvah did, that would be okay. That's what the Tolkien writes. And if you hold that it's snow is a mikvah, so if you kip it out from the middle of winter, but stick your hands into the snow, that would be okay. So we don't do that either. The Tolkien writes. And then again, we don't do that. I remember one time, a long time ago, I remember I was at a Levaya, it was freezing cold day, and there was a lot less snow in the basic world. And after the Levaya was over, I saw a guy sticking his hand into the snow three times. Maybe the water, I don't remember, maybe the water wasn't working, maybe the water had frozen, but he was not doing foolish as I am, which, according to some folks, would be okay. But again, we don't do this for neither the schools, other than the Norfolk School of Caleb. So I'll go part of just the basic halacha, that the standards for mikvah has to be identical to the standard for women. And a lot of these things come up. Very often people call for these kinds of shilas. They want to come in the rivers and the lakes and the mitzvahs and the men's mikvahs and the snow. All these kinds of shilas, you have to first clear it in terms of Yulat Anashim. And then you have to, then you pass those kinds. One time I called me the shila, they were having a barbecue on the beach. And they called me, it's not in the middle of nowhere. And they called me, they wanted to know, do I know where the closest mikvah is? I said, where's the closest mikvah? He said, turn around, it's the Atlantic Ocean. I said, that's the shore of kosher mikvah. We don't like women to play on the ocean. There are a lot of technicalities and sneakers and sneers and danger, but we don't always like to use the ocean for a mikvah. But in terms of being a kosher, bothers a kosher mikvah. I said, Tzvot Kerem, that you can do in the ocean. And that's okay. But to do Tzvot Kerem in any of the other kind of bodies of water, you have to always be careful. Yeah, so we assume that that's not for one of two reasons. Either because I've seen the ocean is always considered to be Meimayon, because it's actually underground sources, and it's probably not really called Zohan, because it's not that the water is going anywhere, it's just moving back and forth kind of the water. It's not like there's an outlet and the water is disappearing. It's the same water, just the wave is moving around. Yes, that's a quite really good line. At what point does the ocean over the river stop? That's always a tricky question. Okay.
Use some of the lines.